So hello, welcome to another of our conference sessions, conference well underway at this stage. So very optimistic title to this session. it's called How to Fail. So chaps, you're going to have to turn that around and find some positivity. So for this session, we've got more friends and colleagues of pharmacy practice. So we've got Yusuf Ahmad. Yusuf's a chief pharmacist, non-executive director, global pharmacy ambassador, advisory and editorial board member, pharmacy practice, of course. Well done, Yusuf, for getting that in. And he's also a university teacher practitioner. You get a point already. And we're joined as well by Gary Redfeather. So Gary's an academic pharmacist, clinical. He's got interest in clinical medical leadership, education and research, and he works at or works with the De Montfort University. So yeah, very intrigued to see where this conversation goes. Really, it was a rather enigmatic title that I gave this session, and yeah, I'll go into why I gave it that title, but let's see where it goes. But it's a fairly existential conversation about you know, are we a profession? By we, I mean pharmacists. You know, what role has failure got to do in the formation and progression of a profession, and all that other stuff? All that, interested to hear your expertise. So, but I'm going to start, because I always ask awkward questions. So I'm going to start with a question, right? And it's sort of an obvious one, really. I mean, you're going to have to reveal your greatest failure. Let's say your greatest professional failure. So who wants to go first?
I can go first. I think for me, my greatest failure was not being there when a colleague that I was responsible for needed my support. And this was, not going into too much detail, but this was when a particular colleague was going through a fitness to practice hearing. And I felt and I practically didn't check in with them, support them, provide that pastoral care as I should have done, as I know as I should have done. And to me, that particular episode stays with me and will always stay with me as an example of what not to do, but also as an example of the opportunity that I have to make a difference in a person's life. Because that's one of the most difficult times when an individual's going through any particular fitness to practice hearing. So for me, it's a very somber failure, but a one that stays front and center in my mind.
Well, after my jovial opening there, Yusuf, I mean, that's a hardcore answer there. Well done. But it's understandable, isn't it? You know, that's failure hurts. You know, it's who likes failing? You know, unless you're off the scale, one of these sort of really entrepreneurial type people or something like that. You know, failure is rubbish, and it usually has consequences for yourself and others. Gary.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, Yusuf. Thank you for starting that off with a personal example, because that was the first thing I thought of, was not so much how I failed, it's how I impacted others. And so I was running a leadership a leader development program in the US a year ago, and I was in charge of a group of about 15 facilitators, and my job was to do the morning check-in, make sure that everyone was off and running to do, you know, what we needed to do for the day. And in our conversation to get things started, and my desire to make sure that we were on time, I cut one person off inadvertently, didn't really mean to do it. Well, this was an absolute trigger for this particular person, because it made them feel a public shame that, you know, they basically handle, and it absolutely not just impacted them, but it impacted how they then served others for the rest of the day. And it was one of those things that I was trying to do well by being efficient, and I had let it slip that people are more important than process, that, you know, people's spirits are more important than timing. And so it was absolutely something that impacted this person which ended up impacting me for a very long time. And so that was by far probably my biggest, what I would consider my biggest professional failure.
Very interesting. Well, it's good to get the failures out of the way. It's an interesting one. And what do you think pharmacists need to know about failure?
Yourself, first.
Yeah. Thank you, Gary. Thank you. And we're both eager to step in and get.
Yeah.
what question? After you, sir.
Yes. So to answer the question, I would say that all pharmacists are researchers. Whether you're a clinician or not, by nature, we are researching. We're researching what medicine works best for what person. We're researching what diagnostics need to be done to make sure that a medicine is working well. So we're inherent researchers. However, we tend to differentiate practice from research. But practice is research, and so the term itself means we're searching for answers. We get them, but it's incomplete information, so then we have to start the search again, which means research, which people can consider a failure. So I, as a pharmacist, didn't have enough information and had a patient treated with something, and something went wrong. That can be seen by many as a failure, but that's the inherent nature of medicine and the inherent qualities of research. And so to me, the biggest thing that pharmacists can really recognize and live much better, especially in the future, is research is what we do. And very rarely do we have all of the information that we need to be 100% accurate. So perfection, it said, is the assassin of progress. And yet the industry, our profession, everyone revolves around being 100% perfect, and that cannot happen. And it's basically crushing us and hurting everyone in the process. So that would be my answer. So Yusuf, what would you add?
That's a very, very good answer, Gary. Anybody that knows me knows that I love history and I love understanding where words come from. And I think, to answer your question directly, I think we need to understand what failure actually means. What does it mean? And if you just bear with me for a minute, I think one of the things that we need to understand, failure was a word from the 17th century. It was a Anglo-Norman French word, which actually meant cessation of supply. At the time, failure was a supply. Funny that, pharmacy context, and it's supply. But what happened during the perhaps 19th century, particularly in the US, it went through a metamorphosis, the word failure, to move away from a supply nomenclature to something that's more familiar to what we know today, both failure being something related to a moralistic and an individualistic connotation. So failure today means something totally different to what it meant a long time ago. And also, you know, and again, this is what many people perhaps fail to realize, is when a person defines failure, they define it based on their terms. Whereas when someone else depicts that, they might see that as a success. So I think one of the things for me is around definition. It's about understanding what failure means to oneself, but also understanding that failure also has a connotation which the environment has put onto us, whereas it has that moral impact and has the individual impact, almost as if you are deemed a failure. It's almost as if that both from an inward perspective and an outward perspective, it means that you are left in the heap, you know? And I think we need to move away from those terms. We need to move away from that connotation to looking at a failure as a circumstance to the situation. It's failure isn't failure. It's something that we observe. It's something that we consider. It can be something that's positive. It can be something that's neutral. I think the nomenclature of failure and the history of what the word means to us needs to change and evolve. And I think that has to evolve based on the environment of our profession. And I think more often than not, when we use the word failure in the pharmacy context, we almost write off that individual concerned. And that's what we need to stop and also move away from. That whole depiction of that individual being a failure, and almost as if that we can't revert to something else, is something which I think we will probably unpick a bit more. But I think that's for me the crux of where we are and where we're going wrong.
Very interesting, both. I think one of the reasons I brought this whole topic up was because, to be very honest with you and everyone, really, as soon as I started failing in my career, most spectacularly when someone marked me as a not performing pharmacist, which, you know, I keep mentioning that, so it was overturned, but I'm struggling to let that one go, many years ago. But it was the first sort of proper check on my career. But after that, once I got over that, and once I started feeling and getting back up and going, and things started to move. The other thing is being in business as well is totally different. Business is all about feeling. So the juxtaposition of, for me anyway, of running a business, trying new things, talking to people, networking, speculating, investing a little bit. And I don't mean money, I mean, investing your time and effort in an idea or direction, feeling, getting up, going again. I was going to say, when I juxtaposition that against Yousaf, some of the stuff you said about, pharmacists maybe fearing failure, I think it's fair enough to say we are a profession that fears failure. There's a quick, do you think the pharmacist profession fears failure more than other healthcare professionals? If so, why? Yousaf?
Undoubtedly so. Undoubtedly, and I reflect quite quickly when I think of that question, based on our profession and based on the medical profession. I know many medical at different grades, many doctors and physicians at multiple grades that believe failure is the route to better patient care. They believe failure is a route to better professional due diligence. Failure is the route to better being a better doctor. And I think that they see failing in a total different context. And the profession, the medical profession, I feel, looking at it from an outsider perspective, protects their members, their registrants, perhaps better than any other professional entity on the planet. And that's, again, a very out there comment, but I do believe that. So the connotations of failure in a medical profession is markedly different to what it is in the pharmacy profession, and also what it is into the nursing profession. I think the nursing and the pharmacy profession are equally fearful and reticent on the word failure, because they deem failure to bad outcomes. They deem failure to a bad registrant. They deem failure to harm, which is not always the case. And I think that, for me, is very, very clear cut in answer to your profession. We see failure as if it's the Armageddon of our profession, it's the Armageddon of our future. And I think that, for me, has to be flipped on its head. It's actually the salvation of our profession, because if you're not failing, you're not improving enough. If you're not failing, you're not innovating enough. And going back to what you're saying, Jonathan, in terms of learning from other industries, the technology industry, the entrepreneur industry, they deem failure as the precipice of the future. It's only when we fail is when we achieve. And, and I think that is something that is totally alien to the pharmacy profession. That whole connotation is alien to us. It's only when we fail that we achieve. And I think this goes very akin to the title of the conference. The future of the profession is not related to the successes that we see it today. It's related to the failures that we are going to have tomorrow. That's where the future lies of our profession, the failures of tomorrow, not the successes of today.
Gary, I'll come to you in a second, but I'm going to follow up, Yousaf. So, yeah, you said a few interesting things there. I think, you know, you hinted that pharmacists are, I can't remember the word you used, but terrified or petrified of failure. So if I'm doing a technical, you know, as a person, if I'm doing a technical task, you know, based on instructions, and I fail at that, that failure is one of a technician. Whereas if I work to a set of values, you know, a pre-agreed direction of travel, professional ethos, behaviors, all the stuff that we associate with professionalism, to me, that's a profession. So, you know, I suppose that the existential underlying question that I wanted to get to with this session, really, and you've helped me get there, is, you know, is the pharmacist profession actually a profession? And I would, you know, talk me back, but if you're saying they're petrified of failure, then that's someone who's working off a crib sheet or an SOP, etc. So without sort of upsetting everyone and alienating all my pharmacist colleagues, do you want to address that?
Yeah. As soon as you say don't work to an SOP, and I know you didn't say that, Jonathan, but, you know, we live and die by the SOP as pharmacy profession, Jonathan, indeed we do. You know, I think there's so much truth in that comment there, because I can tell you from my own experience, I was like that for the first decade of my career. I wasn't a professional, I was a technical expert for the first decade of my career. And that's because I thought there was a black and white way of doing things. Even as a pharmacist, even valuing the patient, even all the standards and what we believe in, the first decade of my career, I always thought there was a right and wrong answer. And wisdom slowly started to creep in, and better understanding of who I am and what I am as a professional came in. And I understood that the fact that there's also right and the grey. So I totally get it. And I was like that. And there's a bit of me that still is like that. But when I spend a lot of time speaking to colleagues within my organisation, within other organisations, and speaking to perhaps the newer generation of pharmacy professionals, they are absolutely terrified of making a mistake, of failing. And what I ask them is, how do you know you failed? How do you know you've made a mistake? Because you've veered away from an SOP, because your senior has defined that as a mistake. And I think those things, when I start to question and just prod a bit more with people that understanding failure, they almost as if see that an event is a perception. We have to look at what the event brings out. So I would personally say is that, you know, failure and mistake are definitions which we still hold in very arbitrary terms, very historical terms. And I think those terms don't set us up for being the future. I also think that there's many people that within our profession, sadly, that still like to point the finger and say that's not right, when actually it can be argued from many, many different viewpoints. And I think there's also one last thing is that we have placed those definitions of failure and mistakes upon us. And I think there's no right or wrong definition of that. That's the issue here. There's no right or wrong definition of what a failure is. It's how it's perceived in us and how we look at things.
Gary, I'm sure you'll want to come in and comment. But in addition to that, what Yousaf said, what I'm interested to understand is where does that fear of failure come from with pharmacists? And the reason I ask that is because I've had some really cool experience of being part of a multidisciplinary team for 4 years in general practice. And That was amazing. You know, it was a, I've said that before. It was a really, really excellent opportunity with really great people. But the culture was totally different to what I understood as a profession. So I'm just agreeing with Yousaf's point about the medical profession. You know, the culture is totally different. So, you know, feel free to comment on what's gone before. But where does that fear of failure come from with pharmacists? Whose fault is it?
Yeah. So this is where I go. We have collectively created the exact situation that we're experiencing. And so every system gives a result that are predicated on how the system is designed. And so pharmacy does have an, I would call it an absolute fear of failure, not even in question. I would agree with Yousaf. I don't believe it's actually very different in some ways to physicians, although they do have a higher tolerance, what I call a tolerance to ambiguity. So a tolerance to ambiguity is, can I handle when things don't go to plan? Physicians, by nature, have a high tolerance to ambiguity because when they go in to do a diagnostic or procedure, it's hit and miss. Pharmacists tend to tend to think that things are black and white. So where the fear of failure comes from is standing in a place where your belief structure has crumbled. Everyone is going to feel some kind of issue when you're in that situation. Where this comes from, to me, is our educational system indoctrinates the students, who will then become practitioners, to fear failure. That everything is black and white. That if you just simply answer these questions in this way, check those boxes, you'll get your degree and you will be a professional. And Jonathan, I couldn't agree with you more. I don't think we're actually acting like professionals. I think we're technicians. Not that there's a bad thing with technicians, but we're doing very manual labor. Beyond that, in the future, pharmacy is certainly not going to be the technical aspects of what we do, period. It's not even going to be there. So the students learn in the education system to fear failure. And then when we get out into the profession, the regulatory bodies penalize us dramatically if we have any kind of lapse. So we've got an education system that sets us up for a profession that slaps us if we have any type of deviation from what people expect to happen. So it's no wonder that we're completely fearful of the outcome. Now, the other part that I would say is probably our saving grace is pharmacists fear failure because they care so deeply. Pharmacists care about their patients. I'm not saying physicians don't, but pharmacists have a unique position that allows us to really interact with the person. Okay, so when we care, that's when we become terrified, because hurting somebody we care about really hits us. And that's where I go, we need to start differentiating our job and what we do from our own self-worth. And this is the difference between willpower and waypower. So willpower is, I never want to hurt anyone. Waypower is, I may not have the skills, or this may be an illusion that will never happen anyway. And so we have to keep balancing these different positions, because if we do nothing, that's a risk. If we do something, that's a risk.
No, just to pick up what you were saying there, Gary, it was really, really interesting. I think, you know, it's fundamentally, do we want pharmacists, you know, the first thing I was going to say was that we've got to recognize that we are generalizing here. You know, there's pharmacists that are, they're going to be shouting at the screen saying, you know, I feel all the time, I'm you know, I do the most professional behaviors, and I do all this stuff based on competencies that I've demonstrated, and I work to professional values and all that stuff. So notwithstanding that, it is a question of, you know, and I suppose this is a question for the maybe for the pharmacist watching, like, are you a pharmacist that just rigidly sticks to the SOP, come hell or high water, you know, point by point by point by point? Are you a stickler for the rules? Do you fear stepping outside them? Or are you the future pharmacist that I think we maybe should all think about moving towards, which is, okay, I don't like failing. I don't like breaking the rules. I am a stickler, but I have flexibility and I work to a set of values. And actually, here's a portfolio of competencies that I've demonstrated to allow me that professional wiggle room to make a decision, because the person that, you know, the person or the thing that is most important in my professional world is the patient, not the procedure. So Yusuf, do you want to add to that? We're sort of dissecting whether the pharmacist profession is actually a profession or not, and possibly being a bit unfair.
No, at all. No, and it's, I think it's a you. I don't think you've ever had this conversation in any platform, at any event. So it's a great one to have. And I think me and you and Gary accept the caveats that SOPs exist to keep us safe, to keep systems safe, to keep our practice safe, and to keep it accountable. And we're not saying they should be abolished. I know we're not saying that. What we're saying is, how do we adhere to professional judgment? How do we adhere to the standards set by our regulator for safe and effective care against the backdrop of stringent SOPs when we have patients and we have experiences and we have events that break the mold? How do we deal with that? You know, and I think that for me is a very, very insightful question and predicament, because ultimately it's not the SOP that will save you from not meeting the standards. It's about your professional judgment, your ability to make person-centered care, your ability to effectively communicate, your ability to speak up, your ability to act in a professional, in a behavior which is professional. Those are the things that are the standards, not the SOP. So albeit, you know, the undertones and a layer and a deeper layer down has the SOP framework, for example, using that example here. But the overarching framework that one has to adhere to is those professional standards. And those professional standards, to me, are those standards which we live and breathe, are those standards which are value-based, are those standards which we step out of the precipice of the SOP and make a call based on our professional judgment. And that's when, if you're able to do that, it doesn't matter if you fail, you make a mistake, hand on heart, if you're able to do that, then you are a professional. Then you are a pharmacist, then you are a registrant, not the fact that you follow an SOP.
Yeah, so to me, what Yusuf was talking about is critical. So we can't throw out all of our SOPs. The SOPs were designed by our best understanding of the science, the situations, you know, those types of things. And I think it was Dwight Eisenhower, though, said in World War II, planning is essential and plans are useless. And so what that means is we have to do our homework. We have to prepare things as much as we can and then realize that in the moment of action, things may have changed. The world may have moved on. And so our planning is absolutely critical. We've got to work our decisions around the best understanding of the sciences and technologies in biology and medicine that is possible, and then realize that when action comes into play, the world may be a very different place. And I think that's what physicians do much better than we do, is they plan, then they get into, say, a surgery, something goes in along a different route, and they readjust. Pharmacists don't tend to do that. And again, I think it's because we care so much. We allow our care to paralyze us. And so this is where I go, what we need to do is step into a different place to say, my best is my best regardless of the outcome. I cannot save everyone and I cannot prevent all harm from happening. But that's true of physicians, that's true of nurses, that's true of everyone. We tend to think that we are completely different from them in that regard, and we're not. That's a humanistic thing. That's a humanistic quality that we don't want to hurt people. And so how do we do this is to just simply have conversations to say, our best decision is this. My understanding at its best is this, and then stand okay with whatever the outcome is. We tried our best, and if that was our best, we can't hold ourselves to any higher standard. And more importantly, others can't hold us to any higher standard as well. Our best is our best. If we're not doing our best, then everyone is open to criticism and criticizing us. So I think this is a brilliant talk because it really does get to an existential place to say, what is the future of pharmacy? The future of pharmacy is being able to stand in a humanistic way with a patient whilst the technical components get taken care of by machines. Because that is going to happen. That's already happening. And that's going to happen even more. So the future of pharmacy is all about basically humanistic psychology with a deep understanding of medicine.
that's we're going deep here, chaps.
Yeah. You can tell Gary. Yeah, Gary's attended also one of the talks that me and Gary love this stuff because exactly what I said in my recent clinical pharmacy congress talk with my fellow colleagues at the time. I think that's where the expertise are of this profession. It's the human expertise, not the technical expertise. And if we fail, in using that term, fail to plan for that, then as a profession, there runs an inherent risk of us being, I wouldn't like to want to use the word obsolete, but for us to become redundant a lot quicker than we should be. And I think that's something that should be front and center in our minds, is that we need to move away from that technical bit. We talked about technical insight and a lot of technical things so far, but that's where I think the crux is, and what Gary mentioned and what I live by, is that we need to really become those experts in the humanistic, both within our profession and now with our profession, with our stakeholders, including our patients.
Can you think of anybody, I'm just sort of trying to bring it back to the real. We're talking in quite abstract terms, and we're touching on, I should probably drop in a few, I can't remember the references, but definitely an author would be Zubin Austin. Yes. And he talks about a lot of the stuff we've touched on, really, procrastinating, perfectionism, all this stuff that that we know about the pharmacist personality. But if we're looking to move beyond that and sort of, folk that are watching this or listening to this are thinking, well, Who can I look up to, or who can I go and look at and shadow or get as a mentor? Who in the pharmacy scene would you look to?
The list is endless, Jonathan. You've just mentioned a heavyweight when it comes of international pharmacy in the guise of Dr. Zubin Austin. What a heavyweight. If you want to learn about values, principles, moralist, moral values in particular, Zubin's your man, the insightful knowing yourself. And I think if you want to bring it back to the UK in community pharmacy, I want to definitely highlight Shaheem Ahmed, who's doing some excellent work in innovation in the community pharmacy space. I would definitely check him out. And he's focusing on the skills of a pharmacist, advancing those skills and applying them in a community pharmacy context. So Fahim Ahmed, when I think about GP land, my head always goes to Graham Stretch, Helen Kilminster, those sort of heavyweights in the world of primary care. And again, they're showing some of the ability of a pharmacist to be part of the wider health and social care team in primary care. And I think for me, it really depicts one of the future roles of pharmacy as being the key member of a wider team in the health and social care space. So I think those two, for me, stand out. And if you look at, you know, research as well, Zahia Barber, who Jonathan, you know, and Gary knows as well, Zahia's been doing a lot of work in the pharmacy space in terms of research and actually paving the way of pharmacies being recognised in the wider international space. So there's a whole host of people that are out there that are doing some exceptional work. I think we're not short of pharmacy professionals, both pharmacists and pharmacy technicians that are doing exceptional work. But for me, what the saddening part of it is that that's still the tip of the iceberg. There's exceptional individuals, but until we become an exceptional profession, we're not going to get to the heights that we want to get to. So for me, and my challenge to myself is, how do we create more Fahim Ahmeds? How do we create more Graham Stretches? How do we create more Jonathan Lairds of this world? How do we create more of those people? You know, and I think that's the challenge to those that are established in the profession, but also a challenge to those that are perhaps new to the profession, is that really the sky's the limit, but we need to create those avenues to help you grow and reach and become those individuals you want to become.
Gary?
Yeah, you just mentioned many of the pharmacists, so I won't echo too many of those. I would just simply say that, you know, when we start looking across the globe, you know, Zubin's in Canada, but there's Ellie Vogt at the University of California, San Francisco. She's phenomenal. There's some beautiful research that's being done down in Australia. But I think, you know, to me, pharmacy can learn a lot more outside of the profession, because we tend to become myopic when we only look at ourselves as quote unquote pharmacists. We're not. We're humans. And so, you know, just simply broaden out, going to Kristen Neff, who does a tremendous amount of research around self-compassion. You know, that's probably one of the best places. We do need to reframe our minds around failure and see that there's a huge literature on something called PTGO, which I bet most pharmacists have never heard of. And so the reason why I'm not going to define it right now, because I want people to sit with the discomfort going, I don't know what he's talking about. But there's some phenomenal work that has been done by Richard Tedeschi and a guy named Stephen Joseph in Nottingham, all around PTGO, and that's called post-traumatic growth order. So this is seeing trauma as a godsend, not a curse. Trauma is going to happen, so why not use that as the ultimate catalyst? So there's a huge field of positive psychology and resiliency training that lies outside of pharmacy that pharmacists can capitalize on. So I think just the field of positive psychology, Tal Ben-Shahar, that's a key person. But very importantly, the field of optimal human performance by a guy named Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, and I will not try to pronounce his Hungarian name or try to spell his Hungarian name, but he speaks beautifully about the state of flow. And so just as an example, when people feel anxieties or when they feel worries or when they feel constricted, it's usually because our skill sets are not aligned to the challenges that we're being asked to do. How often are pharmacists put into that place? And just simply, instead of seeing this as a very easy mismatch between challenge and skills, we tend to go, I'm not worthy. Well, it has nothing to do with worth. It has to do with skill. And you can build a skill, you know, or you have to change a challenge. And so I think, you know, just that's a long-winded answer of saying I agree. There's some phenomenal people within the profession of pharmacy who could be tapped, but there's a much broader world that's sitting out there with some wonderful help that we can apply within pharmacy.
Okay. I don't think I agree with, and it's interesting hearing both of you speak, but I do often think we're a bit of a profession of early adopters and who love a pilot, and you know, and it's not to take away from you know, the well-known faces, of which I probably fall into that category now. But it is, Yusuf, what you said, it is about normalizing these things. And one of the pieces of work I'm involved in at the minute is sort of like mini or micro credentials. You know, it's making training outcome focused and competence based, but actually manageable and, you know, like sort of open to everyone. You know, it's an awful thing to say, but it's almost, you know, inclusive of the weakest pharmacist. And it's not a lack of ambition in the endeavor. It's just I feel that there's a bit of a chasm between sort of, you know, getting from zero to one in terms of taking this step to be less sort of a pragmatic paternalist, or, you know, and all this kind of thing. So it's very complicated. We've some really interesting points. We've spoken general terms, given some examples. It's really made me think, and I'm going to go and read about flow and stuff, Gary. That's all really interesting. And one thing I would say is, if you haven't read, you know, if anybody who's watching hasn't read or looked up Zubin Austin, I highly recommend, and see, you know, read some of his papers and then decide whether you see yourself, because if you're a pharmacist, I bet you will. Listen, guys, thank you very much for your time. It's been absolutely brilliant. This is our first ever conference at Pharmacy in Practice. So
pleasure.
It's just been great to have you both. So thank you very much.
Yeah. Pleasure. And I think what really reminisced when you first asked me, Jonathan, about this was a quote that I live by quite a lot, by Ernest Hemingway. And the quote is about, and he talks about failure, and it quotes about being a better individual. And the quote goes, true nobility doesn't come from comparing yourself with your fellow man. True nobility comes of being better than your former self. And for me, what I get from that is that, and he uses this in the failure context, we thrive, we evolve, we innovate, we become a more rounded individual if we're just better than who we were yesterday. And I think, and that for me helps me guide when I have failures, when I have what I define as mistakes, when I have areas to improve, I remember that quote. And if I can just become better than who I was yesterday, that's enough.
It's interesting. It sort of speaks to my, you know, mini credentialing thing. You know, it's a bite-sized action that you can, you know, it's a box you can tick to say, yes, well, I've done something today that helps me progress. Absolutely. Great way to finish, Gary. Thank you so much. Yusuf, Gary, yep, thank you very much for being on board for our first ever conference. And yeah, let's see in 10, 20 years what the future holds. Take care and goodbye. Thanks.